proceed.
Just a would like to reserve 3 minutes is fine. Your Honor, or the panel, Jim Dorn on behalf of Mrs. Lowe. We're here in regards to what we believe an abuse of discretion in regards to the court, in regards into a sanction dealing with a discovery matter. It's not that that we think that the amount, well, we're not asking in this case for the court to strike the trial de novo or go through the Burnett factors. What we're saying is that the essentially under 26G and the idea of 26G or the discovery process is that a sanction of $3,500 against a insurance company under these facts, and if you want to say the defendant, a defendant who owns nearly 1,200 apartment units, does not deter this type of conduct. And the reason I say that is factually is that this is a standard slip and fall, trip and fall case in which fundamentally when you have a large entity like this, they would have policies and procedures dealing with this type of event. It fall within the common area.
Did this sanction run just against the client or against counsel as well?
My understanding, there wasn't a deference or a statement in the order that said that, Your Honor.
The reason I ask is that lawyers frequently are asked if they've ever had sanctions imposed against them, and the mere fact of a sanction often is more of more consequence than the dollar amount.
I would agree for a lawyer that it's a large issue.
Yep.
Needless to say, in the end, we're dealing with in-house counsel for a large insurance company, which is the counsel, Mr. Lee. I don't know specifically Mr. Lee's track record other than he's where he works. And all I can say is that the idea of deterring that type of conduct should be significant when you're dealing with defendants that are similar in nature. Ms. Lowe was specifically just an individual in comparison to these defendants. I don't think that the sanction of this amount of money based on FISNs would do little to anything to this type of defendant.
Can I go back to where you started
on
this? If the trial court had imposed the sanction of striking the trial de novo.
Correct, Your Honor.
Wouldn't it have to have done that looking at Burnett?
Yes.
That's a very severe sanction. And they would have had to consider the least severe sanction. And so it seemed it would end up at Burnett anyway, if the trial court had done it.
Well, if in the pleadings, in the procedure, I didn't ask only for trial de novo. I asked for striking, which I think is appropriate. I don't think you should be able to try a case under a deceptive process, which is clear that's the main, one of the main issues of the case, and then come back and say, I need another trial. But I asked for striking the trial de novo because that's one of the procedures. I also asked for an instruction that said in the process that not asking for money, and the third was alternative was money. The instruction I asked for was specifically, you know, essentially a finding by the court that the jury could infer that the conduct was in an intent to hide or delay or obstruct the process. And neither of those were found upon, and we had a sanction of $3,500. I just don't believe that that is going to effectively stop these type of defendants in avoiding what is turning into just a nightmare on the civil side is this discovery process. And I think that the Faison's case is pretty much it. I just don't think that, while I understand it's a hard burden for me to go over, which is abuse of discretion burden, I just don't think it's appropriate under these circumstances in relationship to the conduct. And the findings are what they were by the court. I just don't think that they're fair in regards to deterring what seems to be tactical or a process of gamesmanship, which is stick my head in the ground and not pay attention to what's important. I don't know. Step in.
Thank you, Council.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
You don't get to reserve time as a respondent. You have 10 minutes. You can use it as you want now, and what you don't use, you lose.
I also have a cross appeal.
Doesn't matter.
All right. Then I'll use the entire 10 minutes now. Your Honors, civil rules allow the courts to issue sanctions for improper behavior. However, when parties abuse rules to support false allegations for monetary gain, the sanctions process fails and justice is not served.
Let me ask you about this. I'm trying to understand the respondent's position here. This was a slip and fall on a sidewalk, and the position was because they didn't ask about the policies and procedures for the whole apartment, it wasn't a reasonable inquiry to turn over this manual?
Your Honor, as often happens in these cases, especially with multiple defendants, there was the building itself, one of the owners and a management company. Defense counsel needs the aid of various entities and agents within those entities to be able to answer discovery. So the letter which counsel quoted from me actually indicates my true befuddlement about the existence. I was not aware there was a policy manual.
Did you ask?
Yes, we did. The individual at the management, I think it might have been at the ownership company that we had assist us in responding to the actual interrogatories, because that set of interrogatories was directed at that particular defendant. We asked them for assistance in answering those questions. That individual reviewed that and did not believe that either there was a manual or that it covered or that the specific request covered that. That's our process by which we do it. I can't independently interview every single individual that might be representative of these three different entities.
Was the same counsel representing all the entities?
Yes, and that was me. And so I asked.
Did you ask the other two entities?
I didn't ask the other two entities. And then how that eventually came out is in calling the local property, in essence, the local manager at the site for that particular apartment building, at the arbitration, in asking her, in essence, questions that you typically see in a discovery deposition, because she was not called by either side for a discovery deposition prior to the arbitration hearing. The existence of a large operations manual came to light for the first time for me, as well as the other
side.
So
you're telling us that in your investigation to determine whether there were any policy manuals that apply to this property, you didn't ask the local person in charge?
No, I didn't ask the local person. I asked the person, I think that particular set of discovery was directed at the larger ownership entity. I've represented many apartment complexes, and more than half typically do not have some sort of written policy manual. However, what's significant is that how we answered that was, in essence, what's contained in the operations manual, that as far as walkways and general avenues of ingress and egress, that there are multiple walkthroughs from the maintenance personnel as well as the apartment manager on a daily basis. That's how we actually did answer the interrogatory response, and that boils down to what the operation manual actually says. So when I responded to counsel's request about that, if I were trying to hide something or if there was some sort of slick dealings going on my part, I would not have set myself up for embarrassment by saying I'm puzzled by your insistence that you think that there's a policy manual. I did not know. When it came out at the arbitration hearing, at that point it became, and we of course appealed the arbitration award, it became just a tremendous onslaught of discovery with multiple employees of the local apartment complex, including maintenance staff and so forth, on the specifics of this 300-page operations manual. So when that issue became clarified, there was nothing but complete cooperation on our part. But what's probably the most instructive is the relevance or the significance of the operations manual. One way to look at it is the proof is in the pudding. At the arbitration hearing, there was no operation manual. And the arbitrator found 100% liability on the part of the defendants. And the award was near the jurisdictional limit. At trial, the operation manual and the personal protective equipment for employees, that 100-page document, that was all there. Many portions of the operations manual was put into evidence. And the ultimate conclusion of the jury was that the defendants actually went above and beyond the operations manual. The operation manual, if anything, presented an organization, the apartment complex, that had not just oral written policies and procedures in place, but also written ones, something I was not aware of until the arbitration hearing of particular witnesses was questioned about that.
So is it your position that no judge could reasonably conclude that you should have engaged in more inquiry before responding to the discovery request?
No, I think that a judge could reasonably say, you know, more inquiry on your part would have been appropriate. And I take that as constructive criticism, which...
So if that's the case, what's the basis for your appeal?
My appeal is, in essence, first of all, that Carlson is problematic, and we briefed the reasons why. In essence, Carlson Court did not apply Burnett. And as really required in Foster, which is referenced in Carlson...
Does the trial court have to apply Burnett if it's not considering an extreme sanction or the most severe sanction?
And that's a very good point. However, the trial court cited Carlson as the authority that underlay her basis for finding how she did. So if that's the case, then we have to look at Carlson and see if Carlson is problematic. And it is, not only because it does not require a finding of substantial prejudice, as Foster says it should, But also, even within Carlson, there's supposed to be an examination of the willfulness of the discovery violation.
Doesn't CR 26G just require reasonable inquiry and not a willful violation?
I believe it does.
And wasn't that the basis for the sanction here?
I think that the basis for the sanction... Was in essence that defense counsel could have made more reasonable inquiry,
could have or should have.
I'll have to look at the order.
Don't you think should have is the standard? If it's not a reasonable inquiry, you can always do more.
Certainly, and I think that is the standard, and it's in essence an uphill slippery slope because. And this is really what boils down to the problem with those sanctions and the dynamic behind it, because it boils down to the seminal case of Fisons that really examines this problematic dynamic of making a cottage industry or a satellite issue out of discovery issues that clearly, when all the dust settled, had no bearing on the case. If anything, it was additional probative evidence on behalf of the defendants.
Do we look at that, or do we just look at whether a reasonable inquiry would have disclosed this material and it was responsive?
I think we do look at that, because Fisons explicates the whole meaning and the purposes and therefore the proper parameters of discovery sanctions. Because
So you would have lost anyway as a defense to a discovery violation?
It's not the only defense.
Is it a defense?
It is one of the defenses, yes, because substantial prejudice is typically considered. So the problem here, Your Honors, is that this kind of fishing expedition, finding some collateral issue on a on an issue that isn't relevant to those that are in conflict could be found in any case, especially any case with multiple defendants. These kind of discovery sanctions can be brought out of any a number of these scenarios. And then you have a cottage industry that abuses the system of sanctions rather than properly confining it to actual willful behavior that produces prejudice to the parties. And we believe that's what happened here, as evidenced by really no treatment by the appellant as to why the operations manual would have helped them either at arbitration or at trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You didn't use all your time, so you don't need to use all 4 minutes.
I won't. Just a couple comments. I don't take well to the comment of this being sharp tactics or a cottage industry by plaintiff's counsel to obtain money. What you heard is 50% of the time there's policies and procedures, and 50% there isn't. So apparently, as far as, and the defendants are Olympic Management Company, so this is 120 units, is only one of their clients. Okay, so they represent lots of clients. And then you have two is a property owner that has 1,200 units. So we are going to say it's all right to act in that fashion 50% of the time. And so this insurance company gets the benefit of this lack of evidence 50% of the time in their defending their cases.
What's your response to the argument that the trial court erroneously relied on Carlson?
I don't agree with that at all. I think that the court followed 20. I would have loved to have the Burnett argument here today, but I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think I can. I think the court did a very savvy thing. Did CR 26G and said this is what I believe it to be. I don't agree with it, and I do think it's an abuse of discretion. That's why I'm here. But I don't think Carlson's off point at all. I think
you're saying it was an abuse of discretion not to find a willful violation. Well, hone in on what your argument is.
No, I think that it's abuse of discretion because the amount of because that's all I can argue here. The amount of $3,500 is not going to deter.
So what's the threshold for deterrence in terms of dollars?
Well, I can't tell you what it was, but I can tell you if I was the judge what I would have done.
Okay, at what level is it no reasonable person could believe it's a deterrence? That would seem to be the standard.
Yeah.
I can tell you.
In my household, $3,500 would change behavior.
And in my household, it would too. I don't know if in regards to Holland Farmers Insurance Company, which is a multi-million-dollar company, $3,500 is going to stop that conduct.
So what's
especially
the threshold?
If I can finish, you asked me what the threshold is. And I said I know what my personal opinion of what the threshold would be, and it would have been exactly what the arbitration verdict was, is what it would have been. But as far as you said your household, I'm dealing with these defendants, and these defendants are owners of hundreds and hundreds of apartment units and an insurance company that has in-house counsel that makes a significant amount of money based on actuary tables and reducing the amount they have to pay, which this conduct specifically would help them in that process. I don't have anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.